Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for July's Neurology Club webinar. I'm very pleased to welcome back our speaker for today, Professor Simon Platt, based at College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Georgia. Thank you, Simon. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Yep, okay, great. We'll get started. Okay, today's subject is the Chiari-like malformation and syringa hydromyelia, kind of a mouthful to get started with. It's a complex syndrome that we're going to be talking about. Their two major conditions go hand in hand, and so we're going to try and explain a few things about this increasingly prevalent issue. Questions to answer in this session are many, so hopefully we will get through them for you. They're going to include: what are Chiari malformation and syringomyelia? What causes syringomyelia? How prevalent are both these conditions in dogs? What clinical signs occur with these abnormalities? So how should you recognize them? How do I diagnose these problems? How can we treat the diseases? And what breeding recommendations currently exist? So, to begin with, let's talk a little bit about what Chiari malformation is, and we're going to base this on what's known in the human field. So Chiari malformation was originally documented in people by Dr. Hans Chiari, and he described four types of Chiari malformation, which were essentially skull abnormalities that affected the back of the brain, the cerebellum. Type 1 abnormality is the most common and results in pain in most people that are affected, although it can be, as we see in dogs, asymptomatic. And it's defined essentially by the cerebellum being pushed down through the hole in the back of the skull, which is the foramen magnum. This ends up placing a bit of pressure on the surrounding brainstem. So as we'll see with some diagrams in the next few slides, some problem at the back of the skull ends up pushing the cerebellum down through the hole in the back of the skull, and that causes pressure on the foramen magnum. Depending on how far that cerebellum actually pushes through the foramen magnum will determine the actual definition of Chiari in people. So this type 1 is a chronic condition where the cerebellum pushes through the foramen magnum, but without there being any space-occupying lesion or mass in the brain causing it, which is what we can see most typically in dogs and cats when we talk about brain herniation. So when people talk about brain herniation, it's often a very significant issue, something which can result in death. But this is a chronic, very slow condition, so the brain compensates, and we sometimes can see absolutely no clinical signs. So instead of a brain tumor or hematoma, is in this diagram, causing pressure, which then pushes the brain out of the foramen magnum, then we've actually just got an anomaly of the bone at the back of the skull causing that, and it's a chronic condition, so something which the brain compensates for, something which isn't going to cause acute death. So many people that are affected by this are actually children, because it is a birth defect, and these clinical signs that are seen can actually get worse with time, but are also worse by exacerbations of position and activity. So cough and sneezing can make them worse. In addition to pain, they can cause motor dysfunction, so weakness, and sensory changes, which often, as we'll see in cats and dogs, mainly dogs, result in pain and discomfort. Syringomyelia can coexist in people with Chiari-like malformation, and this is going to form a big part of this presentation, talking about what syringomyelia or syringohydromyelia actually is, and why does it coexist. Ultimately, this can result in people in progressive scoliosis, so a curvature of the spine, and this happens in at least a third of these patients. Type 2 Chiari malformation, or Arnold Chiari malformation in people, is again most common in infants, There is an association in this condition with concurrent hydrocephalus. There's again a elongation of the cerebellum in through the foramen magnum. And many of these patients concurrently have spina bifida, so a more severe combination of congenital abnormalities. And instead of pain and some motor and sensory deficits, then this condition can be associated with dysphagia and respiratory distress. So this is a much more serious issue, and the severity increases with the grade through to 3 and 4, which we're not going to talk about because in this session, because they don't mimic any of the canine scenarios. So what is canine Chiari-like malformation? Well, the definition is slightly different. Firstly, we're calling it Chiari-like malformation because it's not exactly the same as the Chiari malformation in people, but it really refers to an abnormality of the occipital bone causing herniation and indentation of the cerebellum. Again, we'll show with some diagrams what we mean by this. So you're born with abnormality of the occipital bone, which is this bone at the back of the skull here. So this bone at the back of the skull here, which then leads into the foramen magnum. So this is the crux of the problem. You are born with some abnormality of this part of the skull, which causes compression of the cerebellum and forces the cerebellum through the foramen magnum, the hole in the back of the skull, which is where the spinal cord comes out of. So in dogs, the assessment is really based on imaging, and we're looking at cerebellar deviation and then cerebellar herniation. So here's a normal cerebellum. It looks like a cauliflower at the back of the skull, which is nice and rounded. The skull is surrounding that here. With a abnormality of that occipital bone here, then we can see that the cerebellum is flattened, so we'll call that deviation. On its own, without much deviation, the cerebellum can be herniated through the foramen magnum, as we can see here, and then you can see deviation and herniation of the cerebellum in this condition. So both are affected, both a flattening and a herniation of the cerebellum. So how common is this in dogs? Well, this herniation is less common in dogs than the indentation itself. However, it depends on the breed that we're talking about. When we're talking about non-Chiari Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, the breed that's most affected by this, if you're asymptomatic, you may have an indentation of your cerebellum in 44% of the time. You may have a impaction where the cerebellum starts to push through the foramen magnum 22% of the time. But if you're a non-symptomatic, if you don't have clinical signs and you're not a Cavalier, then the chances of you having herniation are zero. So not a common severe situation if you're not a Cavalier and you don't have clinical signs. This isn't to say, as we'll talk about, that if you're a non-Cavalier and you have clinical signs that you won't have herniation. That is a possibility. So Chiari malformation can occur in any breed of dog, over all breeds, because it is a sliding scale of presence of an abnormality. It can be present in up to 44% of dogs. It's most common in toy breeds, the most common breed, as we've now mentioned, is the Cavalier King Charles. And in fact, this breed has a huge problem in that up to 99% of Cavalier King Charles have Chiari malformation of some type. And I say of some type because you're already seeing that this can be a confusing issue. Abnormality of the caudal occipital bone can cause an indentation or a flattening of the cerebellum. It can cause the cerebellum to start to push through the foramen magnum. It can cause the cerebellum to herniate. So this is all classed as Chiari, which means that Chiari can be graded. Of any form, it exists in almost all Cavaliers. So a huge problem. How do we assess it? Well, usually we assess it with MRI. As you can see here from the side, we have this flattening of the cerebellum, and then we see the vermis, so-called back of the cerebellum, pushing through that foramen magnum on top of the brainstem, which leads into the spinal cord. But CT can be just as useful. Here we see again the cerebellum, the vermis pushing through the foramen magnum here, down onto the brainstem. So a CT or contrast enhanced CT can actually help if MRI is unavailable. So Chiari malformation is an abnormality of the skull that causes deformity of the back of the brain. Very common in Cavaliers. What is syringomyelia? As we said at the start, this has a very long name, syringohydromyelia, which is now shortened to syringomyelia. This essentially means a syrinx or cyst fluid accumulation builds up within the spinal cord. And most of the time, it's secondary to some obstruction or abnormality of CSF flow. So here is a normal spinal cord where on this MRI, fluid is bright white and we don't see any evidence of fluid in the spinal cord. Here, on this abnormality, we see a huge area of fluid within the spinal cord. So this is a syrinx or a cyst. The whole thing is called syringomyelia. Now, this could be a congenital lesion. This could be secondary to any obstruction, such as a tumor or a disc or post-trauma or a blood clot, something in there that's causing disruption. But most commonly, it's unfortunately related to Chiari-like malformation. So when we look at the spinal cord from the side, we can see that there is a central canal, which is meant to be there and full of spinal fluid, that is slightly dilated. Although it's meant to be there, it's more of a potential space and we don't often see it. The cord end on, we can see here, very small pinpoint, and the ventricles pretty normal in this dog. In this dog, a large area of the spinal cord is taken up by cystic accumulation, fluid accumulation, and on an end-on view, a transverse view of the spinal cord, we can see that there's a large cystic cavity here building up. So the more fluid that builds up, the more likely that we will get clinical signs. Sometimes that obstruction, as we're going to talk about, at the back of the skull, the Chiari-like malformation that is associated with the syringomyelia, can also cause a buildup of fluid in the brain. So you can see large ventricles, which we don't really see in this dog. So when do we call a central canal, which is meant to be there, as we see here, when do we call that a syrinx? Well, for the purposes of grading lately, a syrinx is anything that is more than 2 millimeters in diameter. And so this is a syrinx. A dilated central canal, as we see here, apparently is not a syrinx, but that's part of our problem. We're not really sure when we should start to grade it as an abnormality. And as we'll talk about towards the end of this, that's a huge issue, because if this is going to affect you and cause clinical signs, we need to make sure that we are diagnosing it early enough before it's too late and it's damaged too much of the spinal cord. So we need to be able to assess those dogs which have it and therefore need to be either treated for it and not included in breeding programs. So why does it occur? Well, we've already hinted at the fact it's due to an obstruction of CSF flow. So let's talk a little bit about CSF flow, and this is where we'll have our first video. The video here will show us that CSF, or spinal fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, is created in the lateral ventricles. So we can see in this scenario here, that fluid, the green here, is made in the lateral ventricles and then flows into the third ventricle, the fourth ventricle, around the cerebellum, around the brain. So this is our normal production of fluid from the ventricles, around the brain, and out here. So let's play that again. So you can see that we have fluid being made. This is spinal fluid, cerebrospinal fluid being made in the lateral ventricles, and then the third ventricle, and the fourth ventricle and around the cerebellum, around the brain, and then exits out of the foramen magnum. That spinal fluid, the volume of spinal fluid around the nervous system, is reproduced 5 times in a day. So essentially, it's a tap that's constantly turned on. That tap that's constantly turned on, producing fluid, is going to push that fluid out of the skull. Unless there is some obstruction there, then that will be a normal flow of CSF. If there's obstruction there, then that fluid is going to come out of the foramen magnum with significant force. So that Chiari malformation that we've mentioned is associated with creating increased force of fluid being forced out of the skull. So it's like putting your thumb on the end of a hose pipe. Now we've got this force of fluid exiting the skull, and it drives itself into the spinal cord. So now spinal fluid exiting the skull with force gets driven inside the spinal cord and forces holes and cysts in the spinal cord. So Chiari-like malformation is a deformity of the back of the skull which causes increase of pressure at the back of the skull, forced out with pressure that causes a second condition, which is syringomyelia. So normally, as we've intimated here, that we get normal CSF flow out of the foramen magnum. It happens to be in a pulsatile manner. That pulsatile manner is with every contraction and relaxation of the heart. So a little bit goes out, a little bit less comes back in. So you can start to get an idea that if you block off this foramen magnum, that's with the bone deformity and with the cerebellum pushing through it, that you get an increased pressure. The fluid that's constantly created by this tap that's on all the time has to be forced out of here. And it's forced out over a long period of time into the spinal cord. So in people, half of Chiari type 1 patients have syringomyelia. It's not necessary that you will have to have syringomyelia if you have a Chiari abnormality. If you have syringomyelia, it's likely that the cause of it is Chiari. It's a familial problem, as we'll talk about in dogs. It's likely an inherited issue. Results in chronic pain conditions, and we'll talk about what it does in dogs and cats. And most of the time, these pain conditions are burning sensations, tingling over the neck and back. So bottom line is here is that it's related to Chiari. Not all Chiari patients have syringomyelia, and it's difficult to predict which do and will. In dogs, we talked about Cavalier King Charles being the most severely affected breed. Well, that in that breed, 70 to 75% of affected, so clinically affected Cavaliers with syringomyelia are seen with Chiari. So if you have Chiari and you have clinical signs, 70% of you or so have a syringomyelia. But if you're normal Chiari Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and you have Chiari malformation, because if you're a Cavalier, you essentially have Chiari. If you're normal, clinically normal, then 43% of you can have a syring. So this is a pretty severe situation. This is saying that Cavalier King Charles essentially will have a skull malformation, and you may have no clinical signs. And that can lead to a syrinx. 43% of normal Cavaliers with Chiari will have a syrinx, so spinal cord abnormality. This is a very severe situation. So only 15% of the time, syrinx dogs will have clinical signs. So what this says is that if you have a syrinx, you may be clinically silent. Why is that? Because, well, you only need about 20% of your spinal cord to have full function. There's a lot of reserve capacity in the spinal cord. So this is getting complicated. You could have a Chiari malformation and have no clinical signs. You could have Chiari malformation and a syrinx and have no clinical signs. You could have Chiari malformation and a Sphinx and have clinical signs, but those clinical signs may come on at a very late age, and so it may be too late because you've lost all of that reserve capacity for us to do anything about it. So where do these syrinxes occur? The majority of the time they're occurring in the cranial cervical spinal cord, so C1 to C4. Three quarters of the time they occur caudal cervical spinal cord or thoracolumbar, and half the time they occur in the lumbar sacral area. As we said, with age, syrinx gets worse. So syrinx size does correlate with age. The older you are, the bigger the syrinx gets. And the presence of syrinx increases the chance of signs in later life if you're asymptomatic. So if you get diagnosed with a syrinx on MRI because you've been imaged for another reason or you're part of a breeding program, then you have a 30 to 40% chance that you're going to develop clinical signs later in life. So this is a constantly changing, progressing condition. So what do we know so far from the studies about the pathophysiology of this? Well, this first slide here was a study done in 2009 that said that hindbrain volumes in Cavalier King Charles, the most affected dog by Chiari, versus other small dogs and Labradors were evaluated, and that Cavalier King Charles had a smaller hindbrain, and that by hindbrain we mean the cerebellum, the part of the brain that's most involved in this. So no surprise that as a smaller dog that they would have less volume of brain at the back of their skull than larger dogs. But when compared to other small dogs, it's about the same size. What was found, though, was that the brain volume within the skull of this breed was proportionally larger than other small breeds, meaning that there just was less space. So this is the first time that it was found that although Cavalier King Charles were born with a proportionally normal brain, relative to the skull, it was proportionally larger. So for their body size, normal, but for their skull, too big. So this showed that there is a problem with an overcrowding situation at the back. Their skull is too small at the back because of that abnormality, which is Chiari, and that causes the clinical signs. In 2009, another study went ahead, and this looked at 64 Cavalier King Charles. Not all of them had clinical signs, only 15 had clinical signs. 27 had syringomyelia, so this shows you that syringomyelia is not present in all Cavaliers with Chiari, and 13 of those were clinically normal. So if you have a syrinx, again, you don't have to have clinical signs. And this is a study of the caudal fossa, so-called hindbrain area, and this has shown that actual herniation of the brain is not associated with syrinx or syringomyelia. So although there was a large brain that was associated with being a Cavalier relative to your skull size, and the skull compresses the cerebellum, the physical presence of that herniation was not found to be associated with the syrinx. So that means somehow the herniation is not the whole story about the cause of syringomyelia. And this is where we get into what exactly could be causing this. When looking at Cavalier King Charles compared to another breed, this looked at slightly more mature Cavaliers, 15 of them over 4 years of age, that had a syrinx, and 15 without. All of them, because they're Cavaliers, had COMS, which is chord, let me get my arrow here, which is chordal occipital malformation syndrome. This is another way of saying, as you may have heard of this, another way of saying Chiari-like malformation. And they were compared to 13 normal French bulldogs. And they did a CT-based occipital bone volume and noted that there was no differences. So then this study suggested that occipital hyperplasia, the bone malformation at the back of the skull, is not the cause of syringomyelia, because it's not something that is purely isolated to Cavalier. So this gets confusing. So the cerebellar herniation that's present with Chiari was not said on its own to cause syringomyelia. The bone deformation at the back of the skull, hyperplasia, not the cause of syringomyelia. So then when we look a little bit further, we see a more recent study that said that two significant risk factors have been found for syringomyelia. One of them is brachycephaly. So the fact that you're brachycephalic, a measurement of this is how wide your skull is compared to how long your skull is. And the other, so that increases the risk, and the other is caudal cranium doming. So here we can see the Cavalier, that if you have more of a caudal doming here, you're at greater risk of syringomyelia than not. And so this was a Cavalier that was clear of syringomyelia at 6 years of age. This is a Cavalier at 2.5 years of age that has syringomyelia. And so skull malformation certainly is associated with the presence of syringomyelia, but it seems like it is more the result of the flattening at the back causing a domed skull that is associated with syringomyelia itself. The reason for looking at these things is that we often are going to MRI Cavalier King Charles in a type of breeding program and need to identify what it is that might cause them to develop syringomyelia in the future, therefore determine what's the best way to control the presence of this devastating condition. When looking a little bit further into the pathophysiology of syringomyelia, some CSF flow studies were done, and these studies are done with an MRI with software that allows, as we'll see in the next slide, allows us to look at the flow of spinal fluid out of the foramen magnum. This study looked at 59 Cavaliers and looked at 5 normal controls. The MRI detected syringomyelia in the Cavalier King Charles and looked at the pattern and velocity of CSF. And it found that those Cavaliers that had syringomyelia were more likely to have an obstructed flow. So it's not necessarily the presence of a flat bone, it's not necessarily the presence of herniation, but it is the presence of obstructed flow of CSF. As we'd suggested at the start of this, it's like putting a thumb on the end of a hose pipe. So it's not necessarily the physical, it's more of a functional abnormality here. So this is the MRI, which I'll orientate you through on this video. It's an MRI which is called a phase contrast cine MRI. And this is from this MRI from the side here. So here's the forebrain, here's the spinal cord, and this white here is CSF, and you can see a pulsatile flow. So let's play that again. You can now see when you look at that white, this is around the spinal cord, a pulsatile flow. This is an end-on spinal cord, so transverse section. And you can see that you have here pulsatile flow around the spinal cord. So this is a way of measuring CSF flow, and this is really only a research tool at this stage, which has helped understand that CSF flow abnormalities are associated with syringomyelia, so more of a functional abnormality. couple of other things to mention is that if you have one congenital abnormality, it seems it's more likely you have two or three. And it's been found in Cavalier King Charles that as well as having a flat back of the skull, which we can see in this MRI here, you're more likely to have a ligament hypertrophy between C1 and C2 vertebra. And these are called dorsal atlantoaxial bands. And so it was found that these bands are present in the majority of mature Cavalier King Charles. 31 of 36 in this recent study had these atlantoaxial bands, compared to overall 38% of small or toy breed dogs. Not so common at all in large breed dogs. These bends are associated with the presence of clinical signs and syringomyelia. And you can see that as they cause compression on the spinal cord, that they themselves may result in abnormal CSF flow, which can result in syringomyelia. So a new thing that's been found that's associated with the presence of Chiari, not due to Chiari obviously, but associated with the presence of Chiari, that can result in syringomyelia. The degree of compression not associated with clinical signs, but certainly associated with the creation of syringomyelia. So another thing to address if ultimately we're going to try and treat these cases. Chiari is not the only breed affected, as we'll mention, by this set of conditions. Brussels Griffons are another breed that are affected, and in 2009, 56 of these from around the world were evaluated and showed that not as high as, although not as high as Cavalier King Charles, nearly two-thirds of Brussels Griffon had a Chiari malformation, and nearly half of them had syringomyelia. Some of them having syringomyelia, but no evidence of Chiari malformation, so something else really going on there. And 15%, a little bit like Cavaliers, 15% of syringomyelia dogs had clinical signs. So again, like Cavaliers, just not as prevalent. A lot have Chiari, a lot but less have syringomyelia, and less have clinical signs. It was found that radiographs in this study were predictive of Chiari malformation in 80%. They could look at some skull measurements and suggest which ones had this Chiari malformation that was then later seen in MRI, but couldn't really predict, obviously, whether you have a spinal cord abnormality, which is syringomyelia. So this was this study which measured, based on the skull, certain lengths, and it was found that, as well as having a flat back of the skull and a domed skull, as we talked about in the Cavaliers, then they have a shorter base of the skull. So everything is just pushed together, really. The bones are shorter at the bottom, they're flatter at the back, they're pushed together. If you can imagine this skull collapsing towards itself, then it ultimately results in a more domed skull, and a more domed skull caudally, which is what has been associated with syringomyelia. A more recent study on American Brussels Griffons found a similar thing. This was 84 Brussels Griffons that were evaluated. 28% of these had neurological signs, the majority of which is neck pain. We're going to get into the signs in a second. Cerebellar deviation, 47%, 65% had herniation. So what this says is up to 65% again of this group of dogs had Chiari malformation. Not like 99% of Cavaliers, but a significant proportion of the breed. And then 52% had a syrinx that was larger than 2 millimeters. If we change the definition of a syrinx to 1 millimeter, then nearly 80% of dogs had a syrinx. So many have Chiari, many had a syrinx. And again, it was found that syrinx size was greater in dogs with neurologic signs, but also as associated with ventricular size and cerebellar deviation. So another breed that is affected there. When looking at this, obviously it becomes a concern that this is a condition which could well be genetic, seen as we're seeing it most commonly in the Cavalier King Charles, and as we said in a couple of other breeds here. And so in 2004, cavaliers in a family tree were looked at, and it was found that occipital bone hypoplasia, the Chiari malformation, is likely autosomal recessive. There is a sex-linked inheritance. It's possible. It's not been confirmed. It's not been ruled out. And it may have resulted, this autosomal recessive Chiari malformation may have resulted from deselecting from cardiac valve disease. A more recent genetic study looked at 384 cavaliers with Sphingomyelia and found that there was a moderate high heritability of Sphingomyelia, and that this genetic effect was playing on its susceptibility. So with Sphingomyelia, as we've said, seems to be related to a functional disturbance of spinal fluid flow related to the presence of Chiari malformation. Here, Chiari malformation is inherited, but in itself, there is an inherited predisposition to Sphingomyelia. Not simple, seems to be polygenic or complex, which makes this a difficult thing to really look for on a blood test and breed out. So let's talk now about the clinical signs that we may see. We may see nothing, as we've said, with both Chiari and Sphingomyelia. It is something which affects multiple breeds of dog now. There are toy breeds, small breeds of dog, Cavaliers, top of the list, Brussels Griffons next, but also seen in other small breed dogs such as Chihuahuas, Pomeranians. The number one sign that we see in Cavaliers is a scratching, sometimes called a phantom scratching, and as we'll talk about, seems to be potentially related to a discomfort that occurs over their neck and over their back, particularly when they're excited or they're touched or they have a collar on. This is an abnormal processing of pain, really, that they think that touch is now painful due to their spinal cord being damaged. They can also exhibit vocalization after a sudden postural change, and so you can see a normal dog who then just moves and yelps out in pain. You might evaluate this dog and it not appear to be painful, and so that is a problem. The owners will complain that their dog yelps out in pain and you find nothing. As things progress with chronicity, you can see different signs that are related to more typical spinal cord damage, so ataxia and paresis. In young patients, we may see scoliosis, although less commonly. In other breeds, scratching, as we'll talk about, is less common, is not as big a feature than it is in Cavalier King Charles for some reason. Ultimately, this has been shown to lead to a decreased quality of life in these dogs, as you can imagine, if you're scratching and experiencing intermittent pain. Most of the time it's in young patients, but the older you get, the more likely you are to have a syrinx, and so it can be at any age. And overall, up to 36% of dogs with some sort of syrinx that is detected through an incidental finding through MRI will become symptomatic. So it's important to know that if you're 2 or 3 years of age and you have Chiari and a Sphingomyelia and you have no clinical signs, you might live the rest of your life like that, but you have a third chance of potentially getting worse. So here's a video of the clinical signs. Not that dramatic. You may misinterpret this for a dog who is scratching from a skin disease. So we have constant scratching here when the collar is on in an otherwise normal dog, and then take the collar off and don't touch the dog, and the scratching can stop. Called a phantom scratching because it doesn't actually make contact with the skin most of the time. There is no evidence of skin disease in these patients. Obviously, they should be checked for ear disease and for skin disease, and we shouldn't leap to the presumption that they have a syrinx, but we should leap to the presumption they have Chiari malformation because 99% of them do. So they're normal, they can be normal dogs. Neurologic exam can be completely normal, but you put a collar on them or excite them and they can then start scratching And that is the most common clinical sign of this abnormality. So the clinical signs can be divided into three forms. There can be a very young form that can be associated with hydrocephalus. There's a more juvenile form which is associated with scoliosis. And there's an adult form which is the most common, beginning 8 months of age or so, which is scratching and pain. So this is really the scenario that we will see most commonly, this phantom scratching, intermittent pain scenario. So why is it that they get this intermittent pain? Well, essentially, here's your spinal cord, and the syringomyelia is going to be a structural abnormality that takes place inside the spinal cord where all this complex wiring occurs. So here's the nerve coming in from the outside. So it comes from the skin into your spinal cord. And normally this is going to bring in touch sensations and pressure sensations into the spinal cord, and it's going to be interpreted as such and sent up the spinal cord to the brain. Now, if you get syringomyelia damaging this area, there's an abnormal wiring going on. And so now, instead of touch coming in and being appreciated as touch, such as when you put a collar on a dog, touch comes in and can be appreciated as a burning sensation or as pain, stabbing sensation. And so this miswiring leads to abnormal transmitter levels, leads to a misinterpretation of touch. And this is called neuropathic pain, which is why that many times you can palpate the neck of these dogs and they don't seem to be in this obvious discomfort. And they can yelp out in apparent discomfort, but nothing that you can, there can be nothing that you can find on a physical evaluation. So a complex scenario resulting in a burning sensation, resulting in intermittent pain, resulting in scratching. So kind of a weird spinal cord abnormality, not really seen with really any other conditions. So syringomyelia here, shown by this lake of fluid, causing an abnormality, meaning putting a collar on gets misinterpreted as a burning sensation. So how do we treat this? Well, ultimately, we still don't understand the condition well enough to know what the best treatment is. We do believe that the Chiari malformation in Cavalier King Charles, at least, and in many other small breeds, is really here to stay, and that that's causing this functional abnormality of flow of CSF. A functional abnormality of the CSF flow is something that we can look at treating. It is a constant flow of fluid, so we try to reduce that buildup of fluid, which maybe will reduce the pain. So we can use diuretics, start with furosemide twice a day, and then in many cases add prednisone and anti-inflammatory, which will reduce CSF production as well, as being an anti-inflammatory, and a spinal cord analgesic. So we can use a diuretic and anti-inflammatory pred doses. If inadequate, we could use other analgesics. Gabapentin has been shown to be one of those drugs which can be successful, and we use this at 10 to 20 milligrams per kilogram, 3 times a day. If that's inadequate, other drugs which have been looked at include omeprazole. Now, obviously, this is a proton pump inhibitor and not commonly associated with any type of conditions of the nervous system, but it has been shown to decrease spinal fluid production. So omeprazole is something that we can add at standard doses, which might help these cases, although there's no evidence at this stage clinically that it does. The suggestion is that it may. Tramadol, amantadine, and then the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, all of these can help with neuropathic pain. If none of this works and the dog's quality of life is severely affected, then potentially surgery is necessary. But at this stage, and in my opinion, should be kept as a last resort. What is the surgery? Well, the surgery is taking the thumb off the hose pipe, which essentially means opening up the back of the skull and releasing the cerebellum. This is called a supraoccipital craniectomy, leading to caudal fossa decompression. So craniectomy, taking the bone away, caudal fossa decompression, something which ultimately takes the thumb off the hose pipe. In addition, to expand that release of pressure, a C1 laminectomy, partial laminectomy, has been proposed, where we're taking a little bit of bone away from C1. A durotomy also proposed, so you're opening up the dura around the nervous system, releasing the CSF, albeit temporarily, and maybe shunting that CSF somewhere else, as is done with hydrocephalus, shunting it potentially into the abdomen, something like that. So here we have opening of the back of the skull and the C1 leading to exposure of the cerebellum and the cranial cervical spinal cord. So that surgical treatment is releasing pressure. Now, a few things to make you aware of here is that that release of pressure may be temporary, because you're opening things up here, but things may seal back again over time. In addition, that is potentially not causing an improvement of signs, but is stopping things from getting worse, meaning that you stop the functional cause of syringomyelia, but the syringomyelia is still there. So we have to be careful with what we're suggesting surgery can do. So when we looked at a couple of studies of this surgery, it says that many dogs can actually initially improve. So up to 94% of dogs can improve. Their discomfort, their quality of life can improve. The pain can be controlled. But up to half of them can deteriorate again quite quickly post-operatively. And that post-operative MRI, if performed, will reveal a persistence of syringomyelia, as we've said, so no reason that that would at least quickly disappear, if ever. And obviously there's a risk of cerebellar damage at the time of surgery, so there is some morbidity that potentially could be associated with this. This is not a minor surgery. You're taking the back of the skull off, opening up the cerebellum and the spinal cord, so a big surgery to perform. So can improve dogs, to improve their quality of life, however recurrence is essentially a big concern. And here's another picture of this though, so just to orientate you, the eyes are here and the nose is here, so this is the back of the skull and the neck, and then here is our cerebellum opened up, so you're opening up the back of the skull, a major surgery that would be performed here, that is not without its risk, and certainly is not uniformly successful. Big problem in people that where this is performed most frequently is essentially the creation of a scar at the back of the skull, which can lead to increases of pressure again, and ultimately this is going to cause a return of the condition. And so to try to address this scarring, some people have described titanium mesh being overlain at the back of the skull here. So you can see these metallic titanium screws screwing in mesh over the back of this skull defect here. Other materials have been suggested to try to stop soft tissue scarring causing a recurrence of pressure buildup at the back of the skull. So a huge surgery that takes place, one which may need revising in some patients. So we have a big problem here. We have a congenital condition which is prevalent in many small toy breed dogs, with the Cavalier being uniformly affected by Chiari. So there is a grading system for Chiari that the BVA have put into place and has been recently modified, where we see a grade zero is that you have no Chiari and the cerebellum has a rounded shape. Grade one, Chiari malformation. The cerebellum does not have a rounded shape, but there's an indentation to it. So this presumes that there is some type of malformation of the caudal occipital bone. And a grade 2 Chiari malformation, the back of the cerebellum is impacted into, herniated through the foramen magnum. So here, two grades of Chiari malformation that is present. And to some degree, all cavaliers have either a 1 or a 2. When talking about syringomyelia, then there's now a new grading system for it, where grade 0, you're normal, but it's important not to go through what age you are, because until you're about 5 years of age, you're not really out of the risk of developing syringomyelia. Grade 1 is you have some central canal dilation, but less than 2 millimeters. Grade 2, you have central canal dilation greater, that's meant to say greater than 2 millimeters, or you may have a separate syrinx or a pre-syrinx, meaning that on MRI you can see fluid that's actually developing in an area. So this syringomyelia grading system, based on what can be seen on an MRI, can ultimately lead to some breeding guidelines, which are published on the BVA website. And here they essentially are, that depending on what SM grade you are, what syringomyelia grade you are, will determine what grade you could be bred to. And you will note that if you are a young dog with severe syringomyelia, then you should not be bred to any dogs. And if you are affected by syringomyelia, so over 2 millimeters, then you need to be essentially bred to a dog that has no syringomyelia. This is to try to reduce obviously the prevalence, but because this is a dynamic situation, born with Chiari, you develop syringomyelia over time, that you may be scanned and be normal, but still develop it in a few years' time. So it isn't a black and white genetic condition that can be bred out easily. So in summary, this is a area of neurology and an area of pedigree breeding that is very complicated. Chiari malformation is a skull malformation, most prevalent, uniformly prevalent in cavaliers, but also seen in many other small breed dogs. May be clinically silent, may not be a problem at any point in their life. Syringomyelia is a chronic progressive disease, which is most often related to Chiari. Let's say about 75% of Chiari malformations can ultimately develop syringomyelia. That can also be clinically silent, but with time, it can result in clinical signs in about a third of cases. MRI screening can pick up these cases before they have clinical signs, versus waiting till they have clinical signs. So it's a consideration to screen susceptible breeds early. Medical options are better than surgical options, those which really reduce the production and pressure of CSF. And really, it's only a problem if you're wanting to breed in many dogs. And so in many dogs that have Chiari and syringomyelia, they're not affected with clinical signs. And it's only really a problem if you want to breed these. And so a huge problem in Cavalier King Charles. So that's the end of today's session. Hopefully it is a complicated disease that we're still trying to understand and get in front of, rather than spending, as we've done the last couple of decades, being behind in our understanding. But hopefully this has cleared up a few things as to what Chiari is, what syringomyelia is, how they may be related, and what we can do to try and help out these dogs. So thanks for your attention. A couple of questions. One question is, can you use non-steroidals to help out with the pain in these dogs? And the answer is yes, you can. And certainly, there's a suggestion that this may be enough to help out with discomfort. Non-steroidals don't affect CSF production, whereas anti-inflammatory prednisone doses do. And you obviously can't use prednisone and nonsteroidals together. So perhaps a better option would be the use of steroid rather than nonsteroidal. But in answer to the question, yes, nonsteroidals can help. And then another question is, would you advise screening all toy breed, small breed dogs for the identification of this condition, and then potentially doing surgery on them before Syringomyelia develops? Well, certainly there are screening programs set up where MRI can evaluate the dogs, toy breed dogs, Cavaliers, for the presence of Chiari malformation. The problem is, as you now know, Chiari malformation does not always lead to Syringomyelia, and Chiari malformation is highly prevalent in Cavaliers and in other small breed dogs. Doing a surgery on them is a very radical move and does not guarantee that they won't develop Syringomyelia. So at this stage, I wouldn't advise doing a screening program for the purpose of doing a subsequent surgery on them. Doing a screening program to develop a breeding program is probably sensible, but still understanding which dogs are going to have problems in the future is a difficult area for us. All right, thank you very much for your attention. Appreciate that, and any other questions that come my way, I'm happy to answer them. But until the next time, thank you very much, and we'll speak to you soon.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Simon for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.